5:45 p.m. on January 15th, 2020. I'll bring the Board of Water Commissioners meeting to order. Mark Robinson presiding with Commissioners Horsley and Hoppenstadt. Superintendent Wiseman in attendance, along with Assistant Superintendent Sean Bergman. Thank you, Sean, for coming. We'll open with some opportunities for public comment, if there is any at this point. Okay. We've had a set of minutes from November to review. It was the November 20th meeting. We did not meet in December, so this was the last available set of minutes that has been transcribed. You've had a chance, Scott's still looking at them? Okay. We'll come back to that. Are there any warrants for us to sign tonight?
Sure. Pretty good for those.
Yeah, one minute.
Use Ferguson a lot nearby. Right?
Yeah, they deal with Mueller cheaper than most.
Mm-hmm. It's nice to have it that close.
Yeah.
Oh, you go to Yarmouth though. I thought they were in
Nashville.
This
is actually the stock came this afternoon. It's one that's past due, mm-hmm. but they don't pay it. I don't pay it unless.
I thought there was a Ferguson in Nashville too, wasn't there?
There is. Yep.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, but they don't do the water work. It's plumbing and electric there.
Oh.
So the stuff that gets buried, you got to go down to Howish to get. They got a big stockyard down there and everything.
You guys done with the minutes yet?
I got one.
Yeah.
Proposed amendment. Okay. Minor.
Speak into the mic so Jen can hear.
Yes, please. Bring the mic up close.
Oh, sorry. So page.
Is it on, Scott?
Yeah. Yes. So page 2.
Okay.
Second full paragraph in page 2 that begins with Superintendent Wiseman. Fourth line where it says Little River, this is a statement referring to a comment that I made, and I would like to add after Little River and associated wetlands, because I think that the iron and manganese is probably more associated with the wetland deposits than the stream itself, just to clarify that. So I would just add the words and associated wetlands after Little River on the fourth line.
Okay, is that acceptable, Commissioner Hoppenstadt?
Absolutely.
Okay, we'll add that. I'll link that into the original here.
I would make a motion to approve those as
second
change.
Been moved and seconded to approve the minutes of 11:20:19. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? It's unanimous. Okay, and we have a lot of stuff on this agenda. I've told Jen and Chris by email that I'm not going to cover all of it today because I really want to get into the irrigation and the water treatment report. So let's try to move quickly through these other things, which are really just standing items.
Water quality.
You want to sign that little stage for me?
So Chris, would you like to talk to us about recent water quality issues?
Yes. The PFAS stuff that we're discussing, testing through Mass DEP. Excuse me, I'll just pull this up real quick. I talked with Jonathan Hobel, who's the gentleman who we've been talking with to do the testing. Emailed me about, let's see, on January 10th with a kind of confusing email that said
he noticed that I had not requested PFAS analysis yet. He said, I submitted your request for it, but what had happened was back in November, the state came out and said that there's a grant fund that's going to be paying for PFAS testing. Please apply for it if you want to get some testing done. I assumed because we were already in the works with it that I didn't have to do that. He said that they still want me to do the Survey Monkey that they have there, which is a survey that said how many stuff. He responded back to me today that everything came in, he's got everything now, we've gone through the works so they can be paid back for doing the testing, basically, and that he cannot give me, I did not get my answer for sampling. I don't think it would start any earlier than a month from now, mid-February, and it would be staggered based on lab capacity. It probably would all have to be done by June 30th because I think the money is authorized for the state fiscal year. So it hasn't stepped us forward anymore. All that before of, yep, you're on the list. The list is getting bigger, I guess, right now. So,
but
it's not going to happen before mid-February now.
But we have a little more assurance that it is going to happen.
Correct.
Previously, it was more verbal assurance.
Correct.
Now you've got something in writing.
Yep.
Okay.
So that's for the PFAS. And you asked me to do a little bit of searching around for other results around the town. I sent out an email, and I only got 3 responses from the superintendents out there. But
on what?
On the sodium levels.
Okay.
And 2 out of 3, Chatham went from 16 milligrams per liter to 20 milligrams per liter, which is almost the same as us, if you kind of look at that. Dennis went from a 17.6 to a 25.8 in 10 years. And as of right now, Barnstable didn't give me their last 10 years. They only gave me 2 years worth. Their lowest level in 2016 was 16 milligrams per liter. 19 milligrams per liter. No, I wrote it down wrong, yeah. Yes. They're right now at 2018, with the 19 being the lowest and 50 being the largest out of 2 of their stations. So their average is 40-something now.
Has it gone up? Like
yeah, and in the year that he's had right now, it's gone up just in the last year. He didn't have anything further back than last year that he had quick notes on. But he did tell me that the current levels right now, he has 2 stations out of 5 that have a 50 milligram per liter coming out of them. That's huge. And one that the other two are like 42. It was ridiculous. And then one of them was down as low as 19.
And that's in Barnstable?
That's in Barnstable, yeah. Now, I don't know if it has. I haven't had a chance to talk to him. He just got that to me yesterday, actually, in an email. And I don't know if that's after treatment also. I know they put in sodium hypochlorite also. But with us, it only dropped 1.6 or something like that.
Right
down to 20, even after
right.
With the raw water. So it seems like everywhere is high right now. Also, Hans from Hyannis, who runs the Hyannis Fire District, Water, has told Tom over at Barnstable that he says it was kind of funny because he just stopped by and said his levels were going up tremendously in the last few years. But the town of Barnstable has decided they're putting raw salt down. They're not mixing it with sand anymore because they don't have to put out as much. The guys don't have to be out there as often, and there's not as much cleanup afterwards. So apparently they've gone to complete just rock salt when they're going out, dropping salt only, no sand.
So that could be part of our reason.
It could be part of our problem in the last, because anything off of 28 is going to run right into that well field.
Sure.
Yep.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, question about the graph. Is that okay at this point?
So what we're looking at is the graph that shows the historical sodium in the water. Get to it.
First point is I'm partially colorblind, so my first question is more or less clarification, and that is the top one on the chart, and I can't tell you what the color is, but I'm assuming that's station 5, is that right? The one that's the highest?
Yeah, sorry, let me go through.
Yeah, that's station 5.
Yep. Okay, so the two high ones, actually the other related question is, I'm having trouble reading some of the numbers, Chris, and I don't see any numbers on the right axis to plot them, but I do see, and maybe Tom, I'll share this with you, I see a 20 here,
yep.
And then above it, is that a 13?
13.
So I'm having a hard time.
Making some sense of that?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I saw the same thing, because that looked to me like a 14, and a 14 there, and a 15 down there.
What year is that?
This is, we're looking at 2019. Well, we're looking at 2010, 2011.
And the level there, though, that should be a 31, I think. Hold on. 23.
No,
yes,
23.
20, 13. That's
a 31.
31 is station 5.
No, that's a 13 at station 4. I don't know why it's way up there.
All right, well, I'm seeing the 13 at station 3, and station 4 is 21.
Yeah.
But then
I have the old graph right here.
Okay.
That has the results. I have one is 23,
so
20, 13. Yeah, I'm not looking at the graph. I'm looking at the old results that we had from last. 13 is inaccurate. The graph is up too high here. It should be much lower.
So for those out there in the audience, the recommended maximum is a health advisory for sodium in the water supply is 20 milligrams per liter. So these numbers we're talking about are, some of them are higher than 20, Scott, is that right?
Yeah.
And we have seen this trend, as apparently Chatham, Dennis, and Barnstable have, of the numbers increasing over the year over year, although there are some anomalies, I suppose, but
yes,
the general trend is going up. Yeah.
Well, my thought is that this is important. This is definitely an alert kind of thing, and first question would be if we could get the graph redone a little bit so that we have concentrations on the right side here, and I think the old graph, as you referred to it,
yep.
Chris, maybe was better, at least in terms of clarity.
Right, we can still see at least what's there.
And we can see the table. The tabular data would be nice.
And I think also, Chris, it'd be nice to put line showing like they did in the TATA report of the
13 across or something. Yeah.
Well, this is the 20, okay?
Yeah.
So the 20 is relevant because it refers to that, right? So
right.
So you can see which ones are above and which ones are below the line. And then you could also do just put the numbers on the bars like that. So you're not constantly referring down. Just this makes it easier for people. Something like that.
Oh, okay. My other comment, I guess, is thinking about what might be causing this. You mentioned something
sodium.
Interesting about
and at station 5, they around this time when you see it start going up pretty high at station 5, is about the time they moved their septic system out of our zone 2 and moved it beyond their septic treatment over at Stratford Pond.
Yes.
So we do get we have a well in between that gets tested, and maybe I'll make sure that sodium is there in the groundwater to be tested at the same time when I talk to them about doing the next test, just to see if it's coming from away.
I mean, my quick thought are the two highest are wells 4 and 5.
Mm-hmm.
Well, 4, as we've been talking about, is drawing water from the river. The Little River, and I believe the Route 28 discharge probably goes right down there into the river, close to the office. So that kind of makes sense to me. That
the low area there, it's all an old cranberry bog across there.
That could be probably Route 28 salting. And the other one is number 5 is, I believe, pulls water from that development, which I can't remember the name of.
Stratford Ponds.
No, yeah. The other thing, the other one to the west in the town of Barnstable.
Kachuit Meadows?
Yeah, and actually both of them. Good point. Yeah. And I don't know whether those are private roads or public roads, but
yeah.
Those that may be the source of that problem. And
they're both outside our zone, the zone two also.
Are they?
They both, well, the, not the development, but
right.
their treatment plants are.
Yeah,
because
I'm thinking of road,
treatment
road drainage. Yeah.
Yeah,
they probably have infiltrating catch basins,
mm-hmm.
and if they're loading a bunch of salt on there, that may be the source there. So if we want to address this in the future, those might be some questions to look into.
Low salt areas. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, maybe we want to contact those. I don't know whether those are private roads or public roads. If they're private roads, we'd have to contact.
If they're new subdivisions, they're private roads.
Right.
Yeah.
So those are probably, we have to approach the neighborhood association, what have you, of those two developments for Station 5, which is the highest.
Yep.
And then the other one would be probably dealing with the state DOT on Route 28, which is probably a more challenging. But maybe it's worth. Again, this is just a question. If we want to keep looking at this issue, those would be some likely sources that we could at least inquire about.
And we are required, because we're at 20, to put out, and we have done it for years because we're getting up there.
Yep.
But in the CCR that you also have there, there is a sentence that says if you're high, sensitive at all to sodium, there's health effects that could be. There is a sentence on it in there.
This is the water quality report that we put out.
Correct.
Every spring.
Yeah, sensitive individuals such as those experience hypertension, kidney failure, or congestive heart failures should be aware of sodium levels in drinking water where exposures are being carefully controlled.
It's odd that all of these samples are done in the summer, too, and they're coming up, you know. It's August.
That's a good point.
In September. And we're talking about road salt here.
Mm.
Highly soluble, and it's not going to be persisting in a stream situation in August, I would think.
Well, in the case of the two private developments, they're again infiltrating catch basins, so it's probably going into groundwater.
The groundwater.
Whatever the flow time is from that road to the well might be responsible for the lag time, but that's a good point, Tom. They are all summer readings, most of them.
Is it worth running out after a snowstorm and doing it?
It might
be just something to even write a letter to the association saying, listen, we've noticed levels going up if you do have private in there.
Yeah.
Maybe I can just make a see if I can find someone over there to contact just to see if it is private. If they do, I mean, my driveway, my road's private too for plowing, but the town comes in and sands it.
So, salt it.
So it might be something to do with that also, yeah.
They do that all the time. But this could be also related to irrigation water, because if they're pumping irrigation water out that has salts in it and irrigating their lawns, well, salts tend to reside in the surface.
Yep.
The surface layers for some time, and then they, you know, could be getting into our well.
All this stuff is, that's hooked up to us right now. They're pumping out what
we
give
them. You've got a lot of irrigation in the new development.
Yeah, they used a lot of water right there.
Well, we can keep coming back to this. I'd like Jen and Chris to work on the graph a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's a good handout. I'd ask the scientists among us, is it worth throwing out those weird dips because they're interfering with the trend? Just ignore them, take them out? I mean, it doesn't. It doesn't help the public show the increases, I don't think.
Yeah, it appears something's wrong with the data. It's an anomaly.
Is that what you call it?
That's an anomaly.
An anomaly there and there. So,
I think that's probably not a bad idea.
Just take it out.
Yeah.
Something. Because we're using this to show the public a trend, and I don't want to confuse them with those ridiculous dips, which can't be accurate. And this is a snapshot in time, each year, not even every year, so.
Yeah, and remove these labels, they just don't make sense.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, this is a one-month period in 1998, that's not gonna, there's something wrong there. So I would remove those two, Chris. Did you know what I'm talking about? These
valleys. You got all this there.
Yeah.
Of 98, and then there's September of 98, right?
Yeah.
Where there's that strange anomaly, and then this is 2016.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I don't know. We need to look at the tabular data, too.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to drop that for now.
Yeah.
I'd like to keep moving with the superintendent's report on the tank cleaning, West Street tank cleaning.
Do you want to go out of order, maybe see if Fran needs to, you got to get out of here or anything? Okay. I just didn't know before. So that she's probably here for one thing. I was thinking maybe.
This is the issue we're talking about with the tank next to the old school being discolored, and we're making it. Chris has it on his checklist.
Sure. Okay, I'm going to kind of go a little funny here. I'm going to give you pumpage as of November and general discussion without talking so much about the security or the tank cleaning right now for for November 1st, and I'm going to do it for December, and I'll get into the rest of the discussion there. So superintendent's report read on January 15th, 2020, excuse me. November of 2018, we pumped 6,991,000 gallons of water. In November of 2019, we pumped 7,468,000 gallons of water, for an increase in 2019 of 477,000 gallons of water. We were low the year before. We were really high the year before that. It all fluctuates every year. We should be actually getting, we're not putting a lot of new services in or anything like that, so we should be really leveling out. I just think it's going to take a year for that really to happen, a year to two. And, you know, right now we have, in November was warm. December we had a couple cold snaps, but it was warm most of December. It's been kind of weird. So also in November, we put in one new service and one replacement service, and we didn't have any repairs at all. So we're adding, that's the only one of, it looks here that it's one of maybe three services have gone in the last year. We don't see a lot of new ones going in, they're more replacement now. We'll go to December here. December of 2018, we pumped 6,946,000 gallons of water. And December of 2019, 7,647,000 gallons of water, for an increase of 701,000 in December. We, at the end of December, had quite a leak going on, too, that I'm not sure how long it took it to get up and everything, but we found a radial crack over on Newtown Road. Citizen called in and said, hey, you got water pouring out of the road down there. We went down, and there was quite a bit of water coming out of there. It was an 8-inch, 6-inch water main, but the crack went almost all the way to the head. We had to put a repair band on it and everything else. It was, I haven't seen one in, I'd say, a good 12 years. So I don't know what, you know, these are one of the things where it's just tension inside. It's old cast iron pipe. You don't know. As Sean had mentioned to me, he goes, geez, I think we had a small earthquake not too long ago, you know, that when there could have been something shifting underneath. Yeah, that was very small. You never really know. It could be anything like that. But yep. We did find a little bit of tar on top of the water main, so we don't know if it was movement onto the tar constantly for a while. Whoever backfilled that back there didn't clean it up very well and keep a lot of the tar out of the stuff when they broke the road up around the area. So we did have that, and that was the one repair that we had also in December. So I'm kind of attributing it to that and the weather. We'll see. We're getting into the new year now and see how things are going. We're still, how many people washed their car last weekend? You know, and everything, you know, wow. Also, for the security update, it looks to me command was here and started on Monday tearing out everything from Station 5. It looked like they finished putting everything back in. So we will be over to the new system from Station 5. After getting all the kinks out of everything else from Station 3, they're going to start on the other ones. When we left, there was a guy still working remotely from New York putting the program into the computer that dialed in. So they're going to town on it now. This is hopefully just the beginning of the rest of it. So as soon as this one's done, then they'll come down and stop the next station and keep on going from there.
So three is done?
Three is done, yep, moved over. It's on the new system. Five has just been put over, and I imagine tomorrow morning it'll be ready to... If there's anything, the guy might have to come from New York and do a couple small tweaks here and there, then it'll be ready to go. We're not working anything out anymore. At this point, they all work the same way. It's just a larger version than the last one they did.
Hmm.
And it'll keep going down from there. So they should be moving right along at this point.
Good.
And the tank cleaning. I finally got an answer from Utility Services, which was the third one. And they have agreed to clean out the outside of that tank and the inside of my other tank, because it was due to be done, and do a free inspection, sanitary survey on them both, a sanitary inspection, at the same time. So I signed both contracts last month. They said we're looking at this point, spring, getting out there and doing it.
Spring 2020?
Yep. So hopefully by the time, well, not by the time you get your boat in the water, but by the time some of us get out there where we're going to actually just go swimming or something, you know.
And I assume that the monies for the
West Street tank.
West Street tank.
Yep. I talked to Ray. He told me just to write down the amount. I mean, it hasn't come out of our budget yet. I have to talk about that. But the $15,500 that we put in,
yeah,
it goes into that account. You're just adding another. It's I think it is $16,500 to clean it. 16, something like that, 16.3. So it'll be put in, and we'll take that and with what was left from last two years, and he'll write it out of that. So, yeah, that goes into the preventive maintenance fund from USDA.
When you clean the inside of the tank, where does all the water go? Do you just drain it and then not refill it?
They pump it all. They clean everything down to the end, and then they shovel it out. Because there's probably about a foot of iron and manganese that gets washed off in between everything at the end. There's like a mud ring that goes up in the middle, so that the mud will go up the solids and they'll shovel all that out, get rid of it, and clean everything right down so it's beautiful.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Any questions? Okay, I'd like to spend good bit of time here talking about the water treatment report. And so this is a report that landed on our desks here last summer, which we have conveniently ignored in favor of other urgent matters. But I think it's very important, and it obviously could potentially represent an enormous expenditure for the district. So I want to just ask a few background questions, Chris and Tom, since you were maybe here. How did this come about? Was it as a result of a letter from DEP? Was it something that you noticed as commissioners and superintendents? I've been here over a year and a half, and I never even heard it was going on, and then it just kind of dropped. So what was the impetus behind the whole thing?
Originally, we were having a lot of iron and manganese complaints. And we said, you know, we're looking forward when the whole cost of service came about and everything else. Taryn Howard said at the time, with your levels that are coming up, he said, you're going to get to a point where the state's going to ask you to do something. So whether it's now, whether it's 5 years from now, whether it's 10 years from now, you ought to think about putting something out there and doing it. And so we had talked I brought it up to the commissioners, and they suggested that we have somebody go over all the information and give us a report on the water quality, basically. What are we going to need? What are we going to need to spend? We want to know, you know, how far out this is going to go. So we had asked them to do this, and it took quite a while to get some information back and forth to them. But it came in the end.
So,
yeah.
And I think it was paid for with some of the funds from the cost of services study, because it is a cost of service, right?
Yeah, I think this is one of the things that we paid for it actually, I believe, out of the budget itself. We didn't go ask for any money for it.
Right.
Or anything, right. Yeah, there was some stuff, because a lot of it was done in-house with all testing that we had done. They took historical testing, came back and compiled it all together and everything.
Okay, so what they did, from my understanding, is to analyze 5 years, 6 years of data on the source water, meaning the water that we pump out of the ground, and they looked at a range of potential contaminants. And the one that they were primarily concerned about was manganese. Is that correct?
Yeah, iron and manganese. Iron
and
fluctuates
manganese.
Up and down.
Yeah, but they were
in the past.
More concerned about the manganese, I think. I understood that they didn't explain very well. I had to do my own research. They kept talking about the secondary maximum contaminant level as being 0.05 milligrams per liter, and yet the actual requirement for treatment is 0.3 milligrams per liter.
Mm-hmm. Is that six times as much?
Which
did I do that right?
So, and then I looked at the data, and from 2013 to 2018, looking at all the five wells, the tests came back either somewhere between non-detect all the way up to 0.32. So 0.32, there was one data point out of 32 data points that was this anomaly above the 0.3 maximum level. All the other 31 data points were less than 0.15 milligrams, which is above this advisory level of 0.05, but half of the amount that would require treatment. So I have some questions. Number one, it's unclear in the study whether treatment is required or recommended. It uses the word required, talking about the secondary maximum contaminant levels, but I don't see anything anywhere else that suggests that is a requirement of the state. So I will read a few things about that.
I think the report is lacking on what does
it mean to have high manganese. That should have been in this report. So the first things that pop up in Google searches about manganese in water supplies is that in concentrations higher than 0.05 milligrams per liter, the manganese may become noticeable by impairing color, odor, or taste to the water. However, according to the EPA, health effects are not a concern until concentrations are approximately 10 times higher. So that would be 0.5. as opposed to 0.3. Manganese can be consumed from our diet and in our drinking water. Drinking water with a level of manganese above the guidance level can be harmful for your health, but taking a bath or a shower in it is not. Manganese in your water can stain your laundry, cause scaling on your plumbing, and make your water look, smell, or taste bad. The report suggests that there have been customer complaints. We certainly know of one in the presidential streets, and I noticed that they had taken samples in four different places on that street and showed the impact. I didn't understand why they made a correlation between the proximity of that neighborhood to the bad wells 1, 2, and 4. Why would that make any difference? Just because they're near the wells, it's all going into the same system. I don't live near the Roosevelt Drive, but I don't have any problems. So, and I live near the wells, so I don't I think that was kind of a red herring in the report myself. But in any case, this report recommends that the Kootuat Water Department construct a green sand filter station to take care of iron and manganese. It could be expanded later to include other stations, particularly five, which is a mile and a half away, but it would primarily treat stations 1, 2, and 4 in the main well field, collect it all, service it, put it back out into the system, at a cost of somewhere between $10 and $12 million. And I'm thinking, I could buy a lot of filters for all the presidential streets from now into infinity for $12 million. So you need to convince me, Mr. Superintendent, if the state is not requiring this and most of our accounts are six times less than the requirement for treatment, what is the impetus for pursuing this discussion? And I have an open mind.
Well, the thing
I'm responsible for the public health, but I also think that's outrageous when you think about the fact that most of the water that we're pumping is not used for drinking. And if we're pouring manganese on people's fertilizer lawns, who cares?
I may just add, in their conclusion section, they do say, third sentence, Mass DEP has been strongly recommending treatment for water supplies with manganese levels over 0.21 milligrams per liter.
That's the recommendation. I had that in this list here. So I have requirement treatment, recommended treatment, and then this advisory 0.05.
There's only been one sample result in the entire history, according to this graph, that exceeded that number. Okay.
Right.
And that was in 2014.
Right.
Yeah.
So I just want to second your question.
Oh, thank God. Somebody with some science background.
Yeah, I think the conclusion to go and commit to a treatment plant is premature. And I also would suggest that, as I had mentioned before, I still believe there's a possibility that some of this problem is coming from induced manganese migration from the river and the wetlands. And perhaps that should be evaluated before we spend the $10 million if in fact, we want to go that direction at all.
Yeah. So they do also mention about this emerging contaminant of concern known as PFAS, PFOS, which we talked about here earlier today, and that, you know, it's all such a new field, there's no real good data on it, and we haven't even tested for it yet. That this treatment plant could be modified in the future to include filtration for that substance as well. And, you know, to me, that is potentially a real health concern as opposed to a discoloration or taste concern. So, Chris, tell us why we need to do this.
I don't believe that I could make a case for anything. My plan was, when we were going to get together, is have the people that wrote this come down and explain it to you.
Okay. Do you still want to do that?
I can, but the gentleman who wrote this originally, actually the man who signed it, I can get to come down.
Right.
And discuss it with you.
He appeared with us with the cost study. Wasn't that Ryan?
Yes, that was Ryan. Yep. His boss had offered to come down here, and I said, well, they haven't really put it on the agenda yet. As soon as they do, I'll let you know. This really didn't get through. You know, it's kind of a last-minute thing to say, let's really hit this. So if you guys want to make a discussion on this next month, I can see if I can get Ryan here. I can't get Patrick. Patrick has some medical issues right now. He's been out of commission for a couple months. So he might be getting back soon. I don't know. But he had offered to come down. Patrick had offered to come down here and talk a little bit on it.
So I don't know. I mean, I do know that iron and manganese is a concern throughout the
it's
case.
It's an aesthetic problem. It's a problem.
I know there's a green sand filtration plant in Brewster that I drive by frequently, and I always wondered, what the heck is green sand? Well, you know, now I know what green sand is. I read a little bit about it here. It's basically a filter.
Well, yeah, this is one of the reasons Sean and I were talking earlier. He said, listen, Sean's background for the last 5 years has been in treatment, water treatment over in Falmouth. He was in Hanover at the same time doing treatment there. So he knows a little more about it than me. I mean, to me, green sand and the pressure filters and everything else, I go to him, I go, tell me the difference. What's going on with the pressure and the non-pressure and the carbonated and everything else?
So
I kind of asked him to be here, so if there was questions on any of the treatment stuff, we could kind of switch it over to him.
So Falmouth has a green sand system? And you were running it for a while?
Yeah, you got to get on. Come on to the mic if you could. So you can. Yeah.
Otherwise, you know what, Sean? If you don't, Jen will get mad.
Yeah.
You don't want that.
Make sure it's on, too.
Hello?
Yeah.
Yeah, Falmouth has a 3 MGD green sand plant in North Falmouth, Crooked Pond. I worked there for 3 years. I worked in Hanover. They have 2 green sands and 1 conventional. I spent about a year in Hanover.
And what was the reason that they decided to construct the plants other than elevated levels?
I'm sorry, I'm having a hard time.
Why did they build the plant?
Oh, who, Falmouth?
Yeah.
Falmouth was built for the base contamination.
Oh.
The government paid for that.
Right.
The Air Force or whoever it was.
So these
actually
are the plumes that Mr. Horsley knows about.
Sean, do you know if the system included Long Pond? Because Falmouth has the only surface water supply in Cape Cod.
Right.
And that may be one of the reasons. No?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't include Long Pond.
It does not include Long Pond.
No, Long
okay.
Pond isn't included into that.
No, Long Pond's, it's a separate reservoir.
Okay.
The only thing that feeds off of that is that new Long Pond treatment plant. Tom's been to that one. I gave him a tour of that one. Mm.
So how many towns on the Cape water supplies use these grand sand, green sand filters?
I know Sagamore Beach has a green sand plant. Let's see.
Orleans.
Oh, Wareham's building one. I know that's technically not the Cape, but... let me see who else.
The one in Hyannis is going to have green sand in it also.
Yeah.
That's also going to be with the pressurized for the PFAS. That made me a little nervous. I heard them prices came in higher than what was estimated over there. And I think the estimated cost of, what, $11 million, $12 million over there? Yeah. I've heard the prices that they went out to bid for have come in even higher.
Yeah. For Hyannis?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the past, I think it's Orleans has green sand or...
Brewster, I know it does.
Yeah, Brewster does, yes.
So the study gave, you know, sort of an all-inclusive, it seemed like capital cost. It didn't go into operations and maintenance costs. I noticed there was something about a truck to haul away the sludge. Is that the usual specialized truck?
I'm sorry, specialized?
For the trucks to haul away sludge, how long, how much?
Oh, yeah, it's just you can hire any kind of pump truck.
Oh, okay.
Because if you look at the drawing there, there's a sludge pump that hooks up to the spent wash water tank, and he'll just pump it out and take it to the wastewater treatment plant and pay for disposal per ton, I believe. And
so I'd like to ask Chris, the customer complaints that are noticed in this report, is it the Roosevelt Road people, or is it the whole district? Is it related to Flushing as opposed to manganese?
I do get dirty water complaints all year long. Usually, I couldn't tell you exactly why, but there's an event that goes on that kicks up something, and there's not everybody isn't consistent on it. It's not the same people all the time, except in maybe 2 different incidents that have the problem. To tell you the truth, I mean, there's so many questions behind treatment plants where even the one John was telling me, he heard that they came down in a sanitary survey on Falmouth, and the guy wanted to know why it's not 24-hour manned. That's supposed to be a stipulation, but because of SCADA, video cameras, they say they don't have to be there. you know, an alarm system that there's always a guy that's going to be there for it and shuts it down automatically. So there's so much involved between that and this is more work than I would ever want to get into, to tell you the truth.
Right.
You know, I mean, but if I have to, I have to. So
would you have to hire another person?
No, I don't believe so. I don't think we'd have to hire any more people at all.
No, our green sand plants are highly automated. So the only thing it would add to operational costs would be you'd want to do some raw water testing, some finished water testing. I don't know how sodium hydroxide compares to lime cost-wise or anything like that, but it'd still be sodium hypochlorite for disinfection. So I'm not sure on.
Yeah.
I don't know where to go with calling down consultants to tell us something that we're not very interested in. It doesn't seem like a great use of funds.
I guess my only thought is we have a report that at some point presumably the water commissioner is commissioned, and the report says we ought to do this. So to ignore it kind of makes us...
Should we listen to the water filtration industrial complex come and tell us why we need to do it?
I'm just wondering. I think that is a little bit of an issue in that the report is making a strong recommendation, and I agree with you. I don't see it. I don't see the need for it. But I do think
I guess we should listen. If he can make a strong case why it's better to do it now and get ahead of it,
right.
You know, maybe there's some other consideration.
I think it's worth having him come down.
Would he know, Chris, would he know about whether the feds provide grants for these things?
Oh, yeah. He could help out with that, talk about it a little bit more.
Yeah.
There's always people looking for help.
This could help with our long-term planning efforts, too.
Correct. Correct. And this might be something that we might put in the file and say, all right, we got it under, we're going to monitor it even better. You know, more and more and more. If we see it start rising, if it takes a large spike, you know, I know Mashpee has two microfiltration plants, iron and manganese removal at a couple of their stations. I've never seen what they are, how they work, but I can certainly call over to Andy and ask him to give me a tour at some point and say, hey, just show me what you got there. What's going on? Is this something that's viable to us? Okay. If I was to throw something in for, $50,000 or something like that compared to this and it took care of one station, it might be the highest. Maybe my blending water with something else might be the answer.
So as a homeowner, Sean, if I put a filter on because I was concerned about manganese, I thought I saw in here that it doesn't really do much at the tap.
It just adds maintenance for the homeowner. And if you don't keep on top of it, the filter will break through and it'll make your problem even worse.
Right.
Because the filters can only take so much and then they break through and then you're just doubling your problem.
Yeah.
You know, and most homeowners typically aren't vigilant on stuff like that, I found over the course of my career.
It would still be cheaper to have water department staff go to those houses every week and change the filters than to buy a...
It costs you a new water department employee or something. We might have to get another one in a truck. Yeah.
Well, I think it's a good point because if you look at the water use breakdown, the biggest single use is probably irrigation. And then after that might be showers. And then after that might be washing dishes and cooking, and none of those
are impacted
by iron and manganese
toilets.
Flushing toilets.
So
the only thing we're really worried about are drinking water, and that's not a health hazard. It's a taste thing. Some people believe water with metals in it tastes better, by the way. And distilled water doesn't taste very good at all, by the way. And then there's the clothes washing machine. You can get some staining of clothes with iron. So... when you look at the percentage of the water that's potentially problematic, I think your comment about an in-home filter is something worth thinking about. But I don't know how many people have the problem. We have had some people, but I'm not sure I have no idea what the percentage of customers that have identified this as a problem. But something worth thinking about, I guess, is my
It would be interesting, Chris, going forward, if you could, when you log complaints, put a pin on a map.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
We poke holes in that map.
Ooh, not that one.
Not that one.
Not that map.
Another one just like it. And no, say, we got to complain about odor from...
Color code them.
That's a good idea.
Color code them for different compounds.
Pituit commons.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And because, to me, I mean, manganese, yeah, they have some standards, but as has been said, it's not hazardous to your health.
The only thing it's really hazardous to is babies. That if you mix it with formula, that formula has manganese in it to make it soluble, and it can be dangerous to babies. So you would have to put out, if it gets to a certain level, be careful.
So what's that level?
0.3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That it could be harmful to infants, newborns, if you're mixing the powder and water together, you see people walking around doing it. That's the only time, really, because it is in baby formula.
Is it 0.3? I mean, they don't have an MCL on it.
No, right.
No, so they asked us to keep it below 0.05 for us, the suggested.
Yes.
So anything above that, you know, they say the dangerous levels are 0.3.
Well, isn't that important?
And that was just brought out, I think that was changing. You the new UCMR, rule there.
Scott, is this the same thing as like a planning standard versus a health standard?
Yeah, 0.05 is what they call a secondary drinking water standard. It's not a health.
And they've actually just lowered it, I believe, to it.
Yeah.
When they did the...
But there is this number, 0.3, which frankly I'm not that familiar with, of Mass DEP requiring treatment at that point. We're not there. We're not even close to there, I don't think. So, I mean, my suggestion is either we table this for quite a long time, not really, or have them come down and let's talk about it. And make sure
we still have it. It would be advisable just to have him come down and give a 15-minute thing on it. Say, listen, this is what we got. Everybody can take it home and say, you know what, this seems like way too much money and way too much involved for what's going on. You're really going to have to sell us.
Well, and I think if we get information for some of the more dangerous chemicals of emerging concern, then we would be, a little more motivated to.
Right. You know,
right.
And that would definitely, like, I wouldn't want to make a decision until after we get our PFAS testing
exactly.
back.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's coming soon.
Yep.
So.
Agreed.
It'd be nice if Ryan could come down if he has the time to review this with us, but I don't think it's all that pressing at this point.
And I'm sorry, maybe along those lines it makes sense to get the PFAS test done before because we're going to pay for this guy to come down to the meeting, right?
Yeah.
No. He won't.
Why don't we get that done first and then have him come? Because if we do have a PFAS issue, then we can talk about that.
Then we can talk about that at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, I'd rather build a plant, if necessary, to treat a health effect and as a side effect, then get rid of manganese as opposed to doing it the other way around.
Right.
Sure. And to make sure that plant will treat the PFAS as well. Yeah, right. The other thing is if we start working on irrigation policies and we keep water levels higher in our wetlands and our streams, we may in fact see a decrease in the manganese. And we've been talking about that, but we haven't instituted anything yet. So that could help as well.
Yeah.
And that is much more favorable than treatment. Source reduction, source management.
Is there anything else, Sean, that you would like to say? I want to move this along. Is there anything else that you'd like to tell us that we don't know that we should know?
I was just here if you guys had any questions on processes or anything like that, and I could answer specifics on certain things.
Great. Thanks for coming.
nice to have a treatment operator on staff in case we need.
I like the idea of not abandoning this, but to back burner it.
After the PFAS.
Get the PFAS tests.
Yeah. Yeah.
See if we're alarmed by it. If so, drag Ryan down here to talk about the whole idea of treatment. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Chris?
Yes.
And you could let Ryan know that we're at that point where we want to get that information before we take his time?
Yeah. And they won't charge us if it comes down to explain this. They'll come down and do it.
All right, well, thank you. I'm glad we finally got to that. I've been a little nervous that we had just let it drop here and then ignored it when we saw it on the other side to it. Is there any public comment about this, not having had a chance to read it?
Grand Parks Prudential Committee. I just wanted to say I've been a pediatric physician assistant for 40 years. I've never seen anybody with magnesium problems, and most people are breastfeeding, and if they aren't, they're using bottled water to mix up their formula, which nobody knows what that contains because nobody tests it. So.
Okay.
That's true.
Thank you. Okay, let's move down to Commissioner Horsley wants to talk about irrigation. So we have two different things here. One is a proposed bylaw. And the other is an advisory. You want to talk about the advisory first, Scott?
Sure. And I guess this the version that's here is something that I drafted and you edited, if I get that right?
That's right.
So
it's all still a draft.
That's this one?
Right.
No, the next one.
With a picture of it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a one page and then there's a picture next attached irrigation well picture next to it. Well, actually, I'm sorry. There is a we added the picture. That's right.
Yep.
Beautiful. Kettle River.
Yep. So yeah, I mean, this is just a an attempt to try to explain at least a theory as to what might be going on here. That and again, these we probably should double check some of these numbers. But my look at the pumping data, and Chris, I certainly defer to you as the expert, that maybe approximately half of it may be going to irrigation. And that's a pretty big number, so that should help focus the public on why we want to talk about this. And I think there is, based upon the USGS work, the modeling and a little bit of work that I did last summer, measuring water flow in the river, certainly appears as though there's a connection between the pumping and drawdown and the water levels in the river and flow in the river. So I think the point of this advisory is just to attempt to explain that. The rationale there, and that we get into an option of using an on-site irrigation well instead of the public drinking water supply if people want to irrigate their lawns. And the other point we're trying to convey here is there may be a double benefit of using an on-site irrigation well. One is it relieves the pressure on the, I would argue, the more expensive public system. And secondly, if it's properly sited, might also serve as a nutrient mitigation technique by recycling some of the nitrogen in the groundwater and putting that back on the lawn. This is one of the so-called fertigation wells, one of the 208 tools that was identified during the Cape Cod Commission 208 plan, so I thought we could refer to that as a possibility. So that's the intent of the advisory, and then the policy or regulation, I'm not sure what we call it, is an attempt to, or proposal to put that into practice with some restrictions on, there's really two primary ones. One is essentially says, now I'm referring to the to a water irrigation policy, and point or Section 2, Roman numeral 2, basically says cannot connect any new automatic irrigation system to the public drinking water supply. That if people want to do that, they have to go to put their own private source in. And the second one, which is number 3, suggests that those people that already have automatic sections, we're not going to say you can't keep doing it, but we are asking or requiring them to put in some devices, including rain sensors, low flow heads, etc. And I should mention this language comes directly out of the Mashpee policy, which I think Chris you suggested look at earlier on. So those are the two suggested actions through the policy would be to again prevent new systems going on there and to make the ones that are already on there more efficient. And I think that the advisory might help. The combination of the advisory and the higher water rates might help pull some of the existing irrigation systems offline on a voluntary basis.
Well, thank you for putting that together. So tell me again. So I let's just say I had an automatic system, and if this was imposed through our policies and regulations, do we have policies? Or we have our general policies.
Right.
We don't have regulations per se, do we?
No.
No. So you'd have to
bylaws are as close as that gets.
Yeah.
Well, that's, if I may, that's another question I have, because I'm going to be attending the bylaw committee meeting next week, and I looked at the existing bylaws, and I'm not sure. I have the same question. Does this fit better as a policy here amongst us, or is it something that should be added to the bylaws?
Well, I don't know what regulatory authority we have as commissioners. We have the right to set rates. Do we have the right to create regulations?
Well, but I did look at the bylaws do talk, and I don't have them here with me, but they do say something to the effect that the water commissioners have the right to restrict pumping as needed. Generalized, but I think there's some enabling authority there. But
yes.
I don't know whether Mashpee did this as a policy, the water department, I believe.
But yeah, when they first bought Highwood Water and they started using Highwood,
yeah,
they knew that they couldn't
right
supply water to anybody
right
that was irrigating, that they wanted to go out for fire protection for drinking water. So that's why they put it out, and they've had it out since. Yeah. Anybody that had a well and wanted to switch over, they left the well going and hooked it up to the sprinkler
right
system.
Right.
And how would we enforce it?
Well, I guess you'd we'd have to put out a notice to existing. Well, maybe a question for you, Chris, first. How easy would it be to identify which customers have automatic sessions?
I would send it to everybody.
Okay.
In town,
yeah,
every resident, everybody that we have something with, I would send, because we're going to state that even if you have a house, you're not putting one in now.
Right, that's
existing
true
housing.
Yeah. But back to the question of enforcement, if there are, I mean, I know in my neighborhood I walk around, and of course I can't stop thinking about this stuff, it's just frustrating sometimes, but you know, one of my pet peeves, of course, is to walk down the road when it's raining and have every third lawn being sprinklered.
Yeah.
It's like, what's going on here? So that's, I mean, one could do a survey of that kind of stuff going on and identify where there are systems like that that don't have the rain sensors in them.
We did put a notice in to put rain sensors on probably about 10 years ago. And
you did? Yeah.
And I actually had one of the local irrigation companies stop me on the side of the road and tell me, thank you. He says, you know how much money you've made me this summer? Because he said everybody's calling me and Kachua saying, hey, they want me to put one of these on. Why don't you do it? So he was just getting a straight amount. He said, I had guys going out for days at a whack putting them
yeah
on.
Yeah.
So I think there are conscientious people out there that,
yeah,
you know, if they don't have one. The problem is if they put them on, then they swell up. If they put a cheap one on that's cork or something like that, and it's not work. I was just reading meters last week, and I went by one house, and there it is just lying down on the ground where he resided the side of his house. And he took the rain sensor, laid it down the side of the van. It's probably been there for 6 months now. Not doing any good there.
So I don't understand how you don't need a permit now to put in an automatic sprinkler system, do you?
No. Well, if you're hooking into a plumbing system, you're supposed to.
That's a good point.
You're supposed to go through the town of Barnstable and get a
plumbing
permit.
But no permit from us.
Right.
So the only point of contact for information would be the
plumbing inspector.
The plumbing inspector.
And we ought to be able to get that database, that's all public record. We ought to be able to access that through GIS and identify, you know, what's going on. If somebody's putting one in, we ought to be able to find out about it. If we can coordinate with the town GIS, if we wanted to go that route.
Chris, do you see this more as a policy or a bylaw? I mean, to me, even if it's a policy, we need to get the word out that we're going to consider this and have some additional public hearings meetings.
I do think that the rates themselves are going to make people cut back. I do believe that. It can't be.
Right.
Yeah, they're
but
going
that,
out.
But that alone does not, to me, mitigate any,
so
any
I don't
loss due to the people that are still
yeah.
irrigated when it's raining, and I see it all the time
yeah.
as well.
Yeah.
I mean, you could ask the building, I mean, the plumbing inspector to notify Chris when somebody applies for an in-ground system, and then Chris could contact the person and say, hey, we have this policy. I just don't see it as a regulation. I don't know how you...
You don't see it as a regulation.
I don't know how you enforce it.
Do you see it as a bylaw?
How do we
I mean, you know, it's the hierarchy of, you know, regulation, policies, guidance, advisories. I mean, the information is what's important. I'm just not sure how we force people to retrofit if we don't have a point of contact when they're, you know, if the in-ground supplier is just pulling a plumbing permit. Maybe it's better to get the town to adopt this as a regulation. No?
I'm looking at Fran. She's shaking her head. She has a thought. Would you like to share?
I mean, we have this is Fran Parks. We haven't discussed it at the Prudential Committee and Bylaw Committee. And I was going to run it by Mark Boudreau. But I really think that it's a policy. I don't think, you know, it's, you know, you goop up the bylaws too much, basically, with all of that. I think in terms of getting people to participate, I think there are lots of things you can do. I think you can, for people who have in-ground irrigation like I do, I have a rain sensor. I've always had a rain sensor. It's not on the side of my house. It's on the outside on a pole where it should be. You know, if you can contact some companies and that would maybe provide a lower cost to change the heads and just, you know, get all that kind of information out to people. I think that would make it easier for them to, you know, go ahead and do it if they know that, you know, where to go to get the stuff and that they may be getting a discount price for it. I think that would help along with the brains and, yeah, the people that have their things going on. It rains, drives me nuts.
This has always been an age-old question anyways. Even with when I get told from the state to go to conservation standards where I tell people, hey, you can only water your lawn on even odd days like we ask everybody.
Yeah.
If I go down the road and I got people water on both sides of the road and I walk up to them and say, hey, you got to turn that on. And the guy goes, make me.
Yeah.
What do I do? Call the police? The police are going to look at me and go, I'm not coming down there to tell a guy to shut his water down. It's who enforces the laws that are out there? It's tough because when they step on it.
We don't want to turn the water department into a police force.
Correct.
No,
that's the hardest thing right there. You know, I don't want any of my guys getting threatened or a dog sicked on or someone saying, don't come on my property, you know, and everything else.
I think we need to find incentives. I mean, if we could provide a subsidy to pay for half of these low flow things or something like that, and
yeah,
the people with them don't. The cost isn't the issue, I'm sure, but just something that incentivizes people. I do think the water rates will be part of it. But
Dan Houser, Civic Association. I think we're all assuming really bad intent by everybody, the general public. If there's a real communication put together which explains how much of the water is actually going to irrigation and how much that entails in terms of the risks to the river and why there's a reason to do these kinds of controls, there's a lot of goodwill. People will understand it. I don't think we have to worry about having a police department or getting situations with the town. We explain it, most people in town will get it. And sure, you'll have people who will say, well, but there's a lot of people who are generally concerned about these kinds of issues. And I think we put together a good communication, have a public discussion about it, people who are well-intentioned will act. Mm-hmm. I mean, other things you consider is instead of having it 3 or 4 days a week, 1 or 2 days a week, right? There's all kinds of suggestions that can be made, and I think that we ought to assume that people of good faith will generally follow things if they understand the reasons behind them and that the reasons are valid and they're not some artificial concern about, you know, a 0.1 manganese level or anything else.
Thanks, Jim. I think that's helpful. I did just think of an individual in Osterville, who I won't name, but I know him fairly well, who put in an irrigation system on a large lawn out on the big island out there. And he went for the Class A irrigation system, little pump house with cedar shingles, the whole deal. He's saving a boatload of money.
On water.
Yeah.
Water. How about electricity?
Included. We added up the whole thing. So there is, you know, I think the idea here is to people want to irrigate their lawns to get them on private wells. My sense is from everything I know, I ran on this on my platform here, that I think using drinking water for irrigation is not very sensible. And I think given some of the data we're seeing here, there's some problems.
Oh my God.
What's going on? We're all in trouble.
Amber Alert.
So I guess my thought is, I guess
the Amber Alert works.
I think the education is a good idea, but the return on that is lower than something that has more enforcement behind it. So I think we should think about doing whatever we can do to try to make this happen.
Okay. We're not going to solve it tonight. We have a few other things to do, so let's bring this back again. We'll continue to work on it.
Just while I'm thinking about it, because I'll go, just a quick thing, too. If we do get, I kind of like the whole voluntary letting people know, because when you start making things mandatory, too, people try to get, you know, I've always wanted a sprinkler system, and they start doing it to a point where they let it run at night. It doesn't have a double any kind of backflow preventer on it. They run it out underground, things like that. And I'd hate to have potential for contamination out there also.
Yeah.
I'm not saying a lot of people would do it, but I know it's like somebody who doesn't call town of Barnstable. I knew a guy that used to say, I can throw a system in. I'll just hook up to the outside faucet. And there'll be a piece of pipe dangling there, and he'll just screw it on and stick it to the side. The guy turns it on, irrigation steps. I said, you can't do that. You got to have something there, a backflow preventer in between, so you need an atmospheric check or a pressure vacuum breaker.
Okay.
What's
we're going to move on. Thank you, Scott, for bringing those forward, and we'll keep working on them. I just wanted to ask Chris, is it hard to find data from summer and fall of 2007? That's when these pictures of the river running dry were taken.
We can go back as far as you want.
Yeah, okay.
Well, monthly at least.
I'll come in and look at that with you.
Okay.
I do have to talk about the Prudential Committee Chair communication regarding warrants. I also want to just make sure that we're comfortable sending the letter to the town manager about the Catuit Elementary School. Has everybody seen that letter?
I saw most of it.
Okay.
It looks like they filled in some of the stuff.
Yeah.
Give me a minute.
So it's a letter to the town manager just stating our concerns that we expressed to town councilor Rep. Grizzetti in November about any future uses, proposals for the old school property. Be considerate of water quality impacts. The fact that our property adjoins the school property, and our well is about 800 feet from the school itself, is the rationale why we would be concerned. And so I would like the commissioners to authorize me to sign that letter tomorrow.
So moved.
Seconded.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That's unanimous. And I'm going to talk about these warrants things because I know it was upsetting to the staff recently. I told Chris that oversight is great. I run a small nonprofit business. I have oversight. I also am delegated a lot of supervision of my operations and my staff without having every invoice checked by my board of directors. It seems like an unnecessary check and balance at this point in our, given the number of invoices that we see, standard ones like electric bills, I don't see any reason why the superintendent, the office manager, and the assistant treasurer can't vet those invoices for consistency and reliability and efficiency. If there's some special order, capital costs, whatever, we should obviously be involved with that. It doesn't make any sense to me to be reviewing electric bills. They are what they are. So this came to our attention this past week, Chris, with upset with the accounting staff, and so.
It was a email that I got from Fran. She had emailed me stating that she came in before Christmas and talked to Lisa there, which it kind of surprised me because I was in there, I think, a couple days before, and I approached Lisa and I said, listen, I said, I know there's a late bill in here. I said, it's the holidays. Everything got all messed up. I know that bills don't go out as quick as they do. Just pay the extra $20. I said, I already signed a bill there to say pay the late fee on there. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, you really shouldn't have to. She goes, I'm pretty sure it went in before. I said, well, I don't want any hassles or anything. She said, I'll call on it. I said, okay, fine, no problem. I said, now I know I'm doing this, turning this in now. I said, and it's probably not going to go out to us, so if there's any, there's probably going to be more late fees coming up. And I said, and I still have one waiting for a signature back there, and I had to come in the next day with it because somebody signed it that night. So this is one of the things that I think Fran was talking about, is that sometimes if we can't get two signatures onto the stuff, it doesn't get turned over to Lisa. Lisa herself doesn't work Fridays. We put it out, we get it on Monday, we get it together on Tuesday. It never gets over there till Thursday or Friday, no matter what we do with the signatures. So if she gets it, she doesn't get it till Monday morning when she gets in there. The first thing she has to do on Monday morning is payroll. That takes a day and a half, she said, to do. So bills don't get paid that we turn in Thursday or Friday to the following Tuesday afternoon or Wednesday.
Okay.
So it's a lengthy process no matter how we do it. So I guess what we're doing,
let's hear from Fran, and then I don't want to talk about the mechanics of it. I want to talk about the policy issue. Because if you have a bylaw committee meeting that's going to meet, we have to change the bylaw to avoid having to review all of these warrants.
Well, actually, what the bylaw says is contracts. Contracts made by the water commissioners. Specifically says contracts.
I thought it said more than that.
No.
Looking at article
unless
nine,
I have an old version.
Two?
Bills and warrants.
It says water commissioners.
It says contracted. Contracted by the water commissioners.
Just contracted by them, yeah, it does say.
Yeah. I don't think that includes the electric
all
bill.
All bills and warrants against the district contracted by them.
That's a little confusing because I think I contracted my electric company to provide service.
So you think it's me consulting contracts?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Legally, the only signatures that are required to pay the bills are the Prudential Committee.
Other what?
To pay the bills, to authorize the payment of the bills, and to sign the warrant for all the bills is the Prudential Committee. The fire commissioners, and, you know, legally it's not required. I haven't got any problem with you reviewing all the bills. You know, the problem is that if she gets a stack of bills like she did on a Wednesday and a Thursday, she stops what she's doing to see if there are any late ones. And then if she puts them in the mail, if they're not picked up till 4 o'clock on a Friday, and then they don't get sent out till, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it just, you know, it's better for her work stream if she can get all the warrants in on Tuesday.
Okay. So as a matter of policy, do the commissioners think we should be having to review all of the bills for buying boots for the staff or electric bills or Tom, you like to drill down on things. I know you're a detailed guy.
Well, because they asked me to do that, and that's something that was figured was one of my responsibilities, so I did that. But since day one when I was elected, I've always questioned why we do that when we have a superintendent who's quite competent.
Yeah.
But we do have
And other check and balances.
Yes, and we do, but we also have people in the district that are very happy that we do that and get quite vocal if we don't.
Yeah, we can't.
You can't please everybody else.
No, you can't.
Right.
But and it's causing a problem in the treasurer's office is basically, you know, it's a problem. You know, she just doesn't do the payrolls and she just doesn't do the billing. She's the human resource officer for the district. Shortly, she's going to have to be doing a great deal more of the inputting of information with the retirement system because that's what the county is requiring. They're, you know, all of a sudden, all the treasurers to start doing part of their work, and that's going to take a great deal of time. So I haven't got any problem with you reviewing it, you know, but I don't see why you have to actually sign it, you know, after Chris has checked it over.
Because that's the way we've always done it.
As I know.
We approve it, right? We approve it digitally now.
Yeah.
And
right.
It seems like it's not that onerous anymore, but...
Well, it has been. There
are
glitches, and the passwords don't work, and my texting has to work in conjunction with...
some issues for people through the technology.
It's one more thing in my week that I don't really want
to
do.
It seems to me that any special contract like Tata and Howard or doing some test special makes sense.
Yeah.
The others, I agree with you. The other, the payroll, the bills, the electric bills, I don't know why we have to review that.
So Jen assembles it. You're responsible for it.
I have to initial
and
all bills.
Then it goes to a financial staff person who looks at it a third time, right?
Correct. It actually goes to the Prudential Committee at one point to be reviewed or paid. You guys have to do
it. We have to sign off on
it. Yeah, but you guys don't really, we don't review the bills themselves.
No, but
only Lisa, myself, and Jen do through us.
We review all the charges on the warrant. And if I have a question, I either ask the fire commissioners or if I ever have a question, I've never had to ask you a question.
Yes.
So maybe for the dialogue committee, it's just taking this clause that says the water commissioners shall certify all bills and warrants and moving that clause down to the water superintendent. They'll be responsible for certifying the bills and warrants.
That's a good idea.
And providing them to the Prudential Committee.
What I'm getting now is, in the past, the previous Water Commission has felt that they should have to review. They felt that was reviewing all bills, as I said. So that's why it was that way. If you guys don't feel that way, I have no problem doing what I've been doing right along. I mean, as soon as the bills come in, it's done every Monday. I review them; they're out, you know, and it's gone together. But then and we still right now have to do it electronically, anyways, and send it to Ray because it's a new policy that we have to do that. For there was a big thing at the last meeting, the civics this year, and everything about doing computer backup on everything. So he's asking for an electronic version at the same time, so he can do backup on the warrants at the same time.
You know, if we're just asking the fire department, fire commissioners, fire department, water department to scan all the bills. We only have to keep the hard copy of the bills for a year by law, but recently we had a bill that was 18 months late from Motorola sent in, and the only way to find any information out about it was to somebody go sit down and plod through a box as opposed to, you know, pointing and clicking a couple of times. So it would solve some of our storage problems to do that.
Yeah, and we've been doing that since we went over to the system anyways.
And if we need to make sure that we don't have any conflicts or any issues, Jen can still send us
the
warrants.
We can review it.
But you don't have to wait for us to sign
them
to pay them. And if we have a question,
I like that.
Then we put the comments in the electronic version and say, hey, what's up with this?
I would still think if you're going to do something about trying to clean it up.
Something has to
clean it up before and let... So your
bylaw committee is meeting next
week.
Next Tuesday.
Tuesday, so if we clean something up,
yep.
You could at least advise them that we're going to clean it up.
Why don't,
I think you're,
Jen and I will work on changing the language.
Yep, okay.
We'll give it to you.
Okay.
You can feed it to the committee.
Perfect.
And see where it goes.
While we're on this, Commissioner Heppenstadt noticed, and I'm just trying to paraphrase before, there is in these bylaws, maybe you want to read it, Tom, is it enabling, it basically says we can pass regulations on water use and water waste.
Yep.
Yes. The water department shall have authority to determine and establish from time to time a schedule of water rates and make rules and regulations for the introduction and use of water.
So one question I have is, do we have any rules and regulations? I haven't seen them. We do.
We have this general policy we're going to talk about next time.
Yeah.
But not rules and regulations.
No.
No. General policy.
Okay.
Yeah.
They shall in all suitable ways exercise a careful supervision to protect the interest of the waterworks and the public and shall have all other powers, duties, and responsibilities which are given to water commissioners by general bylaws, bylaws, et cetera.
So, Scott, you just found your preamble to your irrigation policy.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Is there any other thing that's pressing tonight, Chris, that can't wait?
Yeah, can I say one thing? The survey? The
demographic survey?
You don't need to do that.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about
that. We got the demographics from...
Down in Bonsville? Or from the census?
From the clerk.
Okay, good.
Okay.
That's good. That's good.
So you don't need to
sign
that.
Next meeting we will talk about the Water Management Act permit update, which we didn't talk about today, the general policies, leak adjustment. I'll get to you.
Yep.
But we really would need to talk about mostly about the budget, and that's a February thing. So we'll talk about the budget first, first on the agenda when we get to the business of the commission.
Yeah, the only thing I wanted to add is if we're going to talk about the budget and everything, I'm going to have reviews ready for you guys, do the reviews on the guys, and you guys are going to have to review me that
night.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you'll have to have everything there.
So
I'll see if we can get you the paperwork beforehand.
All right. So
or anything like that.
I'll work with you and Jen on just prioritizing these things. I'm a big believer that I burn out after an hour and a half of these, any kind of meeting. So I'd rather meet more often for a shorter amount.
Can I just say one more thing?
One more thing.
We generally ask for a mid-year report from the committees, the Prudential Committee, in February.
Yeah.
So we'll be putting you on the schedule just, you know, just to come in and just give a quick run by through your budget and how it's going.
What day would that be?
To be the fourth Monday of the month.
Okay.
Fourth Monday.
And that's for who to come in? The whole commission, the chair, and the
just
superintendent?
The chair and... Or the superintendent, whoever you want to send.
So you and I will go, Chris. How's that?
Okay.
Yeah. And just to let you know, I put in a white clover lawn this year.
Nice.
I have a green moss lawn.
I have moss and clover.
Yeah.
So the next meeting date will be the third Wednesday in February, which is the 19th. February 19th at 5:45 p.m. Any objection?
No. Policy committee's met a couple times, too. That's for your information.
Is there any burning thing that we need to know
tonight? We're working diligently.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
The one thing I wanted to ask, is that flushing notice okay with you guys also? That was in here to go out with the bills?
I may or may not be here on the 19th.
Okay.
Just because that's...
Is the
vacation, school vacation.
Is the next week better?
Well, it's likely that I'll be here. I never,
You never know. Someone might surprise you with a vacation.
Right? Like somebody's ever done
I don't know
that.
If anybody's listening out there.
So the flushing notice, I looked at it. It looked fine.
Yeah, that's going to go out with the bills
when
we go out and the CCR. If I don't know if you guys noticed anything. If you want to review anything on the CCR, if you don't like something,
I'll give us a call. I'll look at that.
Yep.
One thing, Jen, is that at the bottom of your flushing notice, it says posted daily on the firedistrict.org website. Unless it's on the home page of the website, we should put the backslash and water department, just so people can find things more easily. I think the district website is very inelegant and hard to find things. And so the closer we can get people to the actual information, the better, instead of just saying, oh, it's on the website somewhere. So that's,
so you want to see if we can put backslash water department?
Yeah, yeah, if that's where it is. If it shows up on the home page of the whole district, great, but I don't think it does. So. Okay, is there a motion to adjourn the meeting?
So moved.
At 7:15, all those in favor, say aye.
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 Okay, the meeting is adjourned.